what exactly is happening in Ukraine, or what exactly is happening between Ukraine and Russia. What is happening in that region that's got all of Europe in a tizzy, America also involved. And in fact, this has now become among the biggest international stories in the world. Not so much in India, because in India we are very inward looking and we think that everything that matters in the world happens maybe in UP politics or Punjab politics. We are very provincial sometimes in the way we look at the news. But what's happening between Ukraine and Russia will influence the entire world, including India. There'll be a knock-on effect and there'll be some direct issues as well. Now, what is happening there? Why it's happening? Where it might end up? Will there be a war? If so, what kind of war? If there is a war, who will be on which side? Who will be fighting whom? Where it may end up? How it may end up? So all these are questions that matter. So first of all, will there be a war? When there will be war, if there is a war. Now the answer to that depends on who's giving it. So if you go to the Russians for the answer, they will say this is nonsense, there's going to be no war. So what? If you think that we've got some soldiers or some units close to Ukrainian borders, these are normal maneuvers. Remember, that's exactly what the Chinese said when they came into eastern Ladakh. They said this was an exercise and India underestimated that. India took them at their word. India thought it was an exercise, but that exercise, if it was an exercise, is not over yet. It's almost 2 years, right? So the Russians are saying that our troops are wherever we want them to be. Americans expect us to put our troops where they want them to be. And because our troops are not where they want them to be, they say that we are going to invade Ukraine. No such thing is happening. That's being said by everybody who matters in Russia, starting with Vladimir Putin himself. If you ask the Ukrainians on the other hand think that war will begin at any point. In fact, senior Ukrainian military and security defense leadership says that Russia may invade any time in a month or so. And they say this idea that the winter is too tough and Russians will not be able to do it, that winter and the elements will dissuade the Russians, they say this is nonsensical. For Russian army, these don't matter. Russian army can fight in the winter as Napoleon to Hitler to everybody found out. So they don't take that lightly. So there is a statement in Military Times. It's an American paper which writes about military issues, generally more or less independent. There they've quoted Ukrainian Brigadier General Kirilo Budanov, who says that, look, Russians will invade maybe by January or thereabouts. And if the Russians do it, they'll use airstrikes, artillery, amphibious assaults, and they may come in through Odessa, which is a port, and also Mariupol. Ukraine has an east-west problem, and I will come into that a little bit. But let me first tell you what is piled up on Ukraine's border. So see this graphic. This tells you that lots of Russian units have now piled up along Ukraine's borders. These are called BTGs, or battalion tactical groups. These are basically assault groups. There's a whole bunch of them. Ukrainians now claim, and the American sources and NATO sources now affirm this or confirm this, that Russia now has at least 92,000 to 1 lakh soldiers piled up on Ukraine's borders. Now you might say, oh, that many soldiers we have on the LOC or LAC all the time, but that is not how it is. Because in the European context, it's a lot of soldiers. Russia is a very large army. Ukraine is a much smaller army compared to Russia. So this means a lot of people, and because Russian army is fully mechanized, it has a lot of equipment, and these are special forces. Also, Russia just held an exercise called Zapad 21. There they demonstrated a lot of capabilities that looked like a warning to Ukraine. In that exercise, for example, they showed that they could immediately induct 3,500 troops from their special forces into any place by air, like an airborne assault. So that is something which has got Ukrainians very nervous, because this fighting has been going on in Ukraine now since 2014, early 2014. About 14,000 Ukrainians have got killed on either side, and they don't want any more conflict. At the same time, they can't seem to choose whether to become a part of Europe And if they become a part of Europe, will Europe give them protection, or will the Western world give them adequate protection? Or they would rather go and once again become a kind of a colony or a vassal state, or maybe a protectorate to the Russians. And will the Russians even be satisfied with that? Because Putin's Russia now has ambitions of restoring the old imperial glory. Now that is where they are stuck. So the new defense minister of Ukraine, that is Oleksiy Reznikov, he's been quoted in the American press as saying that he's not sure that Putin has made up his mind to invade Ukraine yet, but he can't rule it out. Then he says that, look, many other things have happened. For example, Wagnergate. There is a scandal called Wagnergate. We had told you about the Wagner group earlier when we were talking about the Sahel group in Africa. Because the Russians have created these militias, like they are like mercenary militias, but they are basically stateless instruments of the state of Russia. These are soldiers or soldiers of fortune, apparently, but they work for the Russian state, who go and fight in other countries, but basically to support causes that might be of interest to the Russian government, to Putin administration. So this is the Wagner group. So it seems that a bunch of Wagner group people were caught in Belarus. There was an agreement that Belarus will transfer them to Ukraine for trial or whatever, but Belarus did not do that. Belarus's own intelligence agency, which is also KGB, the Belarus KGB, they transferred them instead back to the Russians. So once again, the Ukrainians see Belarus and Russia acting in concert. And they also think that Belarus pushing refugees or migrants into Poland, whereby they will all go and spread all over Europe, is part of the same pressure tactics between Russia and Belarus over Ukraine. So right now, as we speak, Belarus and Poland are themselves on the verge of a conflict because Belarus is forcibly pushing these refugees into Poland, hoping that they'll all go into Europe and create a fresh crisis. Now, that Belarus-Poland situation, the migrant crisis, is something that Pia Krishnan Kutty, my young colleague, who does our series World 360, will tell you about in a day or two. So I'll leave it there. I'll just confine myself to the Ukraine situation. Now, the Americans are very worried because Ukraine has been coming closer and closer to NATO. That's one of the reasons why Putin is unhappy and Putin is angry, because he doesn't like it. He sees these countries as countries that broke away from Russia, maybe for the wrong reasons. Ideally, they should come back in the Russian fold, but even if they don't, they cannot become European or they cannot join NATO. So it's a bit like, tum agar mujhko na chaho to koi baat nahi, tum kisi aur ko chahogi to mushkil hogi. Yaad hai, Raj Kapoor sang that in Mukesh's voice quite some time back. Now, what the Americans are doing, the Americans, as usual, are not willing to risk anything, but they are willing to give equipment to Ukraine. So they've given Ukraine some missiles, for example, Javelin missiles to fight tanks. And in the past, Ukrainians have used some American missiles to fight tanks coming in from the Russian side. Although Russians pretend that their people are never coming in, but the so-called rebels, pro-Russian rebels in eastern Ukraine, have been helped by large masses of tanks, which are obviously Russian army. And Ukraine has used this equipment against them. Now, right now, Ukraine is making more demands on America. Ukraine wants more of these Javelin missiles. They also want Patriot missiles, that is to bring down high-flying missiles and aircraft. Also, Stinger missile to target low-flying aircraft and helicopters. But right now, Americans are in two minds. So, I read American media, American military media in particular, think tanks. There is a very lively debate on whether America should send such equipment like Stingers, Patriots, etc., because these are seen as provocations. How will the Russians react? Will the Russians then say that you are destabilizing the situation, encouraging Ukraine to fight us? And will that force Putin's hand? Will this be counterproductive? Again, those who want America to be more proactive, they want America to also send military advisor. They also want America to send military advisors into Ukraine. That is also something that Biden administration is not very keen on. But that's also being debated. Because you know what? In 2013-14, when the Russians came in and they pushed the Ukrainians behind and they grabbed Crimea from them, it was widely said, particularly on the American right, that this happened because they saw Barack Obama as a weak president. If a strong Republican president had been there, no such thing would have happened. So Biden has that pressure as well. So just when Biden has so many other problems all over the world, he has to deal with this problem, and this is in the Western, if I may say so, white world. Now, this has turned the world upside down and inside out, because I told you what's happening with Europe. Europe, in any case, can barely protect itself. It needs America to protect it. How can they protect Ukraine? So they are all looking at America to think that Biden will come and protect Ukraine, or maybe there'll be another summit with Putin. That'll buy some time, if nothing else, for Ukraine. At the same time, Ukrainians are looking for whatever they can find. So where do they find some weapons? They find weapons even from Turkey. So Turkey is selling Ukraine high-tech military drones. Those were used very effectively by Azerbaijanis against Armenians, and we had recorded a whole cut the clutter on that, how that had shown us and how the technology of warfare has completely changed. Now, with this new technology taking the war into another dimension, that is in the air but without any pilots, but with great accuracy and great intelligence and great electronics, what is the value of massed forces of armor? Tanks, armored personnel carriers, infantry combat vehicles, artillery, etc., etc. Even your radars can be targeted very easily at no risk to another life. So, Turks have perfected these technologies. They sold these to Azerbaijanis. They are selling some of these to Pakistan, not because they don't want to sell more, but probably only because Pakistanis don't have more money. But Ukrainians are finding the money. So Turks are selling these to them. But think of the irony. The same Turks who buy the S-400 missiles from Russia and anger the Americans and draw sanctions from America are now selling military combat drones to Ukraine, which is an enemy of Russia. But that is the way the real world is. That's how real politics works. Every man for himself. So what exactly is Ukraine? Now, Ukraine is not a small country. It's a very large country. So if you're more familiar with the map of America, because Europe, particularly this part of Europe, tends to get very complicated also because some borders have kept on changing, then you could say that Ukraine is about the size of Texas. Texas is a very large state. So Ukraine's area is 6.7 lakh square kilometers, population is 4.2 crores. At 6.7 lakh square kilometers, it is a very large country. Not only that, it has the seventh largest population in Europe. Now, what does the seventh largest in Europe mean? That means Russia is the largest, Turkey the second largest, Turkey is part of Turkey in Asia. Turkey the second largest, Germany, France, UK, Italy, Spain, and then Ukraine. So it is one of the larger European nations, but much smaller compared to Russia. Again, see where Ukraine is located. So Ukraine to the east has Russia. To the north, it has Belarus. That means Belarus and Russia have a common border. Then as you go west, it has Poland, Slovakia a little bit, then Hungary and Romania. So all these were countries earlier that was generally under the Soviet bloc's sway. They were either members directly of the Soviet bloc or they were there in their sway. And then Moldavia next to Romania. Now, Moldavia is another country where Russia has been up to its tricks, where Putin's Russia has been up to its tricks. Once again, because he would rather keep these countries either unstable or completely dependent on Russia. He does not want them breaking away, looking at Europe. Now, what is the conflict? There are two sides to the conflict. One is the conflict within Ukraine, and second is the conflict between Ukraine and Russia. Ukraine and Russia is simpler. Russia wants Ukraine either to come back in the Russian fold, right? Because they think Ukraine was always a part of Russia. What the hell is this? This is an abomination. That's because now Putin has generated such hard nationalism and irredentism. Ukraine also has a very complicated history of sovereignty. In fact, if you look at the history of past 500 years, then Ukraine has hardly ever been independent. So it's been independent, a sovereign nation since 1991, since the Soviet bloc broke up, and there was always a strong impulse in Ukraine to break away and become an independent country. Before that, it was briefly an independent sovereign country after the First World War. But once again, Stalin, etc. came in and it became part of the Russian Empire. Before that, it had continued to be ruled by the Russian Empire. In fact, the last evidence you find of Ukraine having been a sovereign country then is not available till the 17th century, that means till the 1600s. So for a long time, this country has been ruled by other countries, so it hasn't really been a sovereign country. And that causes more confusion. In fact, as I read an article, wrong article explainer on Vox, and I will share it with you, they in fact tell you that there is a complication with the very name Ukraine. Is it Ukraine? Is it the Ukraine? So when you say the Ukraine, it means a territory, right? The subcontinent, right? It's a territory. In old Slavic language, it means borderlands. So these are borderlands of Russia and some other European countries. So no country particularly owns it, and this isn't particularly a country. But when you say Ukraine with a capital U, just Ukraine, that means it's a proper noun, it's a name, it's a country. And the very fact that you find both usages in practice, it tells you that there's been confusion about whether this is an independent sovereign territory or not. And that is where some of this contradiction comes from. Of course, most of the Ukrainians now think that they are an independent sovereign country, but within Europe. So this is the problem with Russia, easy to understand. What is the problem within Ukraine? The problem within Ukraine is, if you see the map of Ukraine, there's a clear east-west divide. East is closer to Russia, sort of Belarus. Now, people in the east, a lot more of them are of Russian origin. A lot more of them speak Russian. In fact, 1 in 5 Ukrainians are of Russian extraction because Russians were there for so long. A lot of them are on the eastern side. In every election also, East Ukraine has voted differently from West Ukraine. So West Ukraine, because it borders Europe, it thinks that its future, its fate is linked to Europe, and they'd rather be European and therefore be part of NATO and have those protections. People on the east think that, look, we've always been part of Russia. We depend on Russia economically. We get fuel from there, all kinds of things from Russia. Russia can give us security. Where is the harm in being more closely linked with Russia? That causes internal strife within Ukraine. So 2013, Ukraine had a president, Viktor Yanukovych, who was seen to be very pro-Russian, very corrupt, despotic. And he's somebody who did not want this integration with Europe because he would rather have gone with Russia or as an ally of Russia. So there was a big revolt against him. There was a big protest. The big protest took place in a place called Maidan Nizal. I don't know how to pronounce it. I will try and pronounce it right. But Maidan, as we say, Maidan, khel ke maidan mein jaiye, playground or a square, right? So Maidan Nizal Snosti. And that is why this protest was called Euro Maidan. So just as there was Tahrir Square in the Middle East, in Arab countries, in Ukraine, there was the Euro Maidan movement. So all these people came into the Maidan protesting against Yanukovych. He used a lot of dirty tricks, heavy-handed putting down of this revolt. But ultimately, he failed. And by November or so, he was thrown out of power and he had to flee the country. As that happened, the Russians got very worried. The very next month, Russians began pushing in their troops and their help and armaments. And at that point, a rebellion broke out in East Ukraine, and those rebels, armed and helped by the Russians, began to cease. As that happened, fighting picked up and Ukrainians fought back. And then we know that unfortunate thing happened. The Malaysian Airlines airliner MH17, that was shot down, apparently, or in fact now globally believed to be by these East Ukrainian rebels with Soviet gifted missiles, maybe an S-300. Now it's possible and it's likely that this was inadvertently shot down, but it was a great tragedy, and the whole world then decided that they had had enough of it, and the whole world began to help Ukraine in fighting these rebels. As these rebels were pushed back, the Russians came back in. That stopped the Ukrainian government forces. Then the Russians came and took over Crimea. Crimea is a peninsular area, quite a large peninsular area. Russians took it over, saying this has traditionally been a part of Russia. Also, a majority of Crimea's 2.5 million approximately population happens to be of Russian extraction. So Russians came in, they took it forcibly and actually bloodlessly, because nobody stood back and fought, because Ukrainians had had their hands full in their own eastern regions. So Russians took over, and then something dramatic happened. In February 2014, there was a referendum in Crimea where 41% people said they wanted to go with Russia. So 41% is a lot of people, but it's still not a majority. Once the Russian took over, they held one more referendum, right, which the world did not recognize because this was not supervised or watched by any international organizations. In that referendum, 97% voted to be with Russia. So basically, Russians annexed this large and strategic peninsula with 2.5 million people from Ukraine, and nobody could do anything about it. And while the Western world, particularly America, threw a lot of sanctions, etc., at Russia, and it crippled Russia's economy, Russians are saying, look, you guys did something very, very similar in Yugoslavia. As Yugoslavia unraveled, the old republic, then you are the ones who enabled Kosovo, a tiny Kosovo, with population even less than Crimea, to in fact become independent. And so many countries have recognized it. So, aapne Kosovo mein kiya to theek hai, hum yahan kar rahe hain to galat hai. We are doing exactly what you did in Kosovo. So, that argument has been going on. So, that's where we stand right now. Once again, eastern Ukraine is now increasingly going out of the control of the government, which is more dominated by Western Ukrainians. And that's why you will find a lot of trouble in an area which is called Donbass in your headlines. And you'll be wondering what this Donbass is. The Donbass is nothing but a name for a larger area in eastern Ukraine which has cities of Slovyansk and Donetsk. Again, those are names that you see in your headlines occasionally if you watch international news. And the commander of the rebels there is a man called Igor Girkin. Igor, quote unquote, Strelkov Girkin. He's a Russian internal army veteran, and he is somebody who gets enormous amount of support from the Russians. So as rebels under Igor Strelkov Girkin push deeper and deeper and put the government forces on the defensive, they have the reassurance that the Russians are there by their side. More and more Russian advisors are coming in, more and more Russian troops in Mufti are coming in. Then this Russian BTGs, battalion target groups, are lined up all over. Russia has also alerted its reservists, it's recalled its reservists, which means what it means in the Russian doctrine is that when BTGs go and take territory, they will move on and reservists will then come and consolidate control over that territory. So will this come to war or not? Is it just posturing or will it get worse? We don't know. We don't know when the whistle will be blown, because also only one person, one man has the whistle in this situation, and that is Vladimir Putin. So please keep watching him. You know that he's unpredictable, but the only thing predictable about him is that he loves brinkmanship.